Hello, welcome back to Millennial 2018, and I am now here with Critical Condition. So, hello, welcome to...
Hi, thanks for having me, Woz. It's a pleasure to be here. Oh,
sorry, I was muted, I didn't realise. Yeah. Yes, well, yes, it's nice to have you back, because you were on last Millennial, 2017, and so I think it's nice to sort of... bring you back and ask about what's been happening, because you have been on a bit of a journey. But first, why don't you just briefly introduce yourself to people who might not know about you and your channel?
My name's Robin, but I go by Critical Condition. That's the name of my my YouTube channel. I guess I started my journey on YouTube almost 2 years ago now, and it began when I was kind of red-pilled, I guess, by different people in the community. Jordan Peterson opened me up to a lot of new ideas that made me finally able to be critical of things like feminism for the first time in my life. And it's just kind of been a slow, I think, but positive progression towards who I currently am now and what I'm working on in my personal life, and then sharing with my audience, hoping to inspire people to, you know, sort themselves out, or, you know, plan a future that they believe is, will be meaningful for them.
Right. And what were the concerns in the first place on the channel?
So I guess the in the beginning, it was kind of like learning how to be grateful for capitalism, things like that. Finally finding my voice and feeling strong, saying that I'm not a feminist. I don't agree with the feminist ideology. And then, you know, stating the reasons why I'm really opposed to that. I guess the whole first part of the channel was really an expression of what I'm not anymore, and feeling comfortable finally saying no to certain liberal cultural things that I had been passively allowing into my life.
Yeah, because that's the thing, that there was definitely a sense of transition, and that yes, you were sort of just making the first steps towards a red-pilled outlook on life, and you had come from a very liberal outlook on life, and that was, yes, and that definitely came through in the Millennial Hangout that we did last year. But it was already it was clear from your channel that this is a girl or woman. I don't know which term you'd be more respectful. Making this change and sort of, yes, wanting to document it to some extent along the way.
Yes, exactly. I think a lot of the problem was that most of these ideas, they weren't something that I was raised with. They were things that I had accumulated after leaving home and getting my liberal arts degree in the big city. But I was raised in a very Christian and conservative household, and so a lot of this sort of transition and transformation has been about reclaiming my roots in a way, and getting back to basics, and reestablishing damaged relationships with people like my father and my mother, who, you know, I would have previously called like bigots, and, you know, I probably wouldn't have called them a racist, but I definitely would have had harsh words to describe their political outlook on life, which I now share with them. So it's been a really natural and effortless transition for me, I feel like.
Isn't it so striking and kind of embarrassing to look back on oneself at 18, 20 and think, God, I thought I knew it all. I thought I knew everything. I thought I was so clever and enlightened and, mm-hmm, wiser than you know, my parents. And now I know that I was just a complete idiot, basically.
It's mortifying.
Yeah. But that's the sort of confidence and the arrogance of the young, isn't it? But then again, absolutely, it's fed by the liberal arts college.
Yes, absolutely it is. And I remember coming home on Christmas break, and, you know, when you're around your family, once you've gotten all of the catching up conversations out of the way, it almost inevitably turns into, you know, politics and culture and what's going on in the world. And I would always end up in these horrible fights with my parents and stuff. And I remember very distinctly now my grandfather saying to me, the communist professors at your university have brainwashed you. And I remember him saying that to me and me thinking, oh, he's so backwards. This guy's ancient. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And he was 100% right. And I've apologized to him since. And he's delighted that I can finally avail of his wealth of knowledge.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, the term communist always sounds, you know, a bit too much until you realize, they really are communists.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
I mean, even if they're not into the economics, it doesn't matter because, I mean, to some extent, I expect that the communist professors of 50 years ago weren't really into the economics either. It's really a mindset. It's a way of interacting with the world and feeling about being alive, being a human being.
But absolutely.
I think it's basically, and it's an extremely destructive one.
Yeah, I think so too. And that was one of the things that, I mean, I originally liked a lot about Jordan Peterson. I have a lot of problems with him now. I think that should probably go without saying. But even just the idea that hierarchies are natural, that, you know, hierarchies often indicate competence. These were kind of like, you know, as cringy as they were, like, mind-blowing to me, you know, at the time. But it seemed so obvious that it was really easy for me to integrate it into my worldview. And that was a big part of how I started to appreciate European societies and capitalism and not see them as this kind of historically oppressive.
Well, you know, as you say, it's easy to integrate these concepts once you allow yourself to trust them. Because at first, it seems... Yeah, there comes a point when you realize that it's actually very easy to this makes sense, and you think, but it can't be real. It can't be correct. And you think, well, then it's so simple. How does it can't be real because it's so simple. Therefore, it must be false. It must be a delusion. But actually, then you realize, no, the very complex, long-winded stuff that I've been taught at college, that's the delusion. And it's so long-winded and complex and vague and muddy because it's ultimately a delusion. They're lying to you. And
well, it does. It takes years for you to integrate the language and the ideology into your worldview. Whereas I felt like, you know, even though this has taken me a year or two to fully embody, it was quite effortless because it was so obviously true to me, a lot of these things. A lot more so than, you know, reading about structuralism and critical theory and this kind of stuff.
Oh yeah, and also a lot. It's also a lot more fun. Isn't quite the right word. It's just whatever the opposite of mind numbing would be, because you know it's mind numbing to hear about critical theory and cultural Marxism. It is incredibly boring, and it always amazes me because a lot of effort must go in. I know that a lot of effort goes into making oneself interested in this stuff, this endless verbiage of the communist academic.
Absolutely. And I remember going through my reading material in university, and it was so incomprehensible. You know, you'd have to take each sentence one at a time and break things down and look up definitions in your textbook because they weren't words that you could find in the dictionary, you know? You know, I think as a young student, you give this kind of authority to your professors and to the university. You know, it's something you've been preparing for your whole life up until this point. And rather than say, well, you know, there are some people, it is because you feel inferior. You feel like the problem is with you and not with the material. And so, yeah, I would have thought, you know, oh, I'm so thick. Like I can't understand this. It would take me, you know, days or even a week to get my head around a concept. And really it was the concept itself that was so convoluted and not my ability to understand. That was the problem.
Yeah. A lot of it just simply doesn't map onto real life. And so you have to do a lot of mental gymnastics in order to, well, make it seem to work.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, actually, a lot of it's simply gobbledygook. Even once you've read it and reread it and reread it, it's ultimately just all sitting atop more gobbledygook. So, when it interacts with, when you try to apply it to the real world, it's just it's just resentment. It's just more sort of power. And I said this in one of the previous millennials, there's this just endless obsession with power. This person, who does what to whom? This person has power over that person. This group has power over that group. It's all just endless analyses of power, with the assumption that that must be unjust, and yes, it must absolutely. It has to be undone.
Yes, and they find a way to weasel it into, you know, fields of study that really should have nothing to do with that. My major was film. You know, I signed up for that program thinking that I was going to learn about film and the cinema as a form of art, as, you know, my actual concentration, the thing that I was most interested in, was national cinemas and the way that people and societies and cultures express their unique identity through their cinema over time. And, you know, it's quite relevant to yeah, like sort of my nationalism today. But back then, I had to look at these films through the lens of, for example,
you were like a lamb to the slaughter, really, right?
Yes, I was. And I mean, I was writing essays about how, you know, Hollywood undermined Black masculinity, and about, you know, how feminist power dynamics are expressed through lesbian pornography and this kind of stuff. Literally, you know, and that wasn't what I signed up for at all. But, you know, you sort of have to deal with what your professors give you. And you learn really quick how to please your professors and how to get the grades and just get in and get out, you know.
And another aspect of this is that you're at that age, you're sort of breaking away from your parents, but you're not breaking away from, and you think that by doing so, or you think that in doing so, you're becoming an independent thinker.
Yes.
Actually, you're not. You're just looking for a new set of parents to contrast with your old parents. Yeah, yes, and so that's why you're desperate to please them.
Exactly.
I think this is more true of women, to be honest. I think it's more true of female students, but it also does apply to... Because what male student wants to be told by his professors that he's thick? You know, obviously every male student wants to gain some kind of approval from his professors.
Of course. And of course, you know, women just tend to be more agreeable, I think, than men. You know, that's just it's a personality trait that has been mapped among women it expresses itself more in women. And so we're going to absorb
it. To put it in Peterson speak, they're high in trait agreeableness.
Exactly. And I am as an individual, because I've done the Big Five personality quiz by Jordan Peterson, and I think I was in like the 98th percentile for agreeableness. So like out of 100 people, I would be more agreeable than 98 of them, which is like nearly like pathological, you know.
Well, that's another one of his favorite words, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So I think the next step in all of this is, well, I know that you traveled. You went after university. You were traveling.
Of course, like a good liberal young woman does.
Indeed, a good millennial. and then after that, and we talked about that last year, so we don't need to go into it now. But and then after that, you at some point discovered Jordan Peterson. And I mean, do you want to talk about that now?
Sure, we can briefly talk about a year's hindsight.
Go on.
Yeah, we can briefly talk about it. I think the thing that was most important with regard to Jordan Peterson and how he helped me was, there's a couple things. And one of them was I had a really, really kind of poor relationship with my father. My parents are divorced and he moved away when I was quite young. And so there was that. And then he's also always been a Republican, you know. He voted for George Bush, and he's like into MAGA and loved Trump and stuff. And because I wasn't immediately turned off by Trump, and my dad was really into him, and I was also exploring with this, you know, save your father from the belly of the whale stuff with Jordan Peterson, I was open to listening to what he had to say about it. And it turned out that I ended up having a lot more in common with my dad politically than I had originally thought.
Do you think, and maybe this is a bit too personal, but I'll just say it. Mm-hmm. And do you think that one of the things which made you amenable to Donald Trump was that he was an alpha male and a sort of surrogate father figure, given that you didn't get on with your real father at that time?
I don't know if I'd say surrogate father figure. I think that it would be more appropriate to even say that about Jordan Peterson, because the whole clean your room, sort your life out before you try and change the world was very powerful for me at the time. I didn't see Trump as a father figure. I saw my father in Trump, if that makes sense, because my father is a very macho man, masculine, like loves his sports, you know, loves grilling meat. Like he's just like the typical America boomer type dude, like in the best possible way, you know, like kind of like a Hank Hill type person. And so I saw that kind of, you know, crass sense of humor and boisterousness and confidence that in Trump. And it reminded me of my father, and I found it quite endearing, actually.
Right, I see. That's interesting. Yeah. So, to return to the Jordan Peterson issue then, topic.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So, how long were you impressed, like in an unalloyed way, by Jordan Peterson? Was that like a year, 2 years, 3 years?
About a year. Yeah, about a year, and. I did the personality quiz, which I thought was really helpful, and I did the authoring program. So I did the past, the present, and the future authoring program. And I was in a point in my life where I was in a really unhappy relationship. I was not taking care of myself. I had a few addictive, compulsive type behaviors that I wanted to get rid of. I was under eating, not exercising, you know, didn't have a good social life. There's a lot of things that were out of order in my personal life. And so that program, it straightened out the trauma of my past, and it situated me in the present in a way that was helpful and allowed me to create a future that I actually would want to like go for. And I think that also the other thing that really helped me with the authorship program was you get to create a little hell. So it's like, if I keep going on the way that I'm going, what is the end product of my bad behavior is going to be? And that sort of little future possible hell that I could end up in if I let all of the bad things that I knew I shouldn't be doing continue really motivated me to get my life in order. And all those things, you know, I will always be grateful for Jordan Peterson with regard to those things. But shortly after I finished the program was the Faith Goldie situation. And that really, like, because I admired Jordan Peterson, he was my hero. And this huge contradiction.
No, but when did that happen? Was that, like, Charlottesville was August last year. I think that his deplatforming of her was about March this year, if I recall correctly.
Was it that? No. Yeah. Was it really?
I think it was.
Because I feel like I was still in Ireland when I had my first moment of feeling like Jordan Peterson is not being true to his word. And his whole thing was, you know, be honest and tell the truth and see what happens, you know. And he seemed to be contradicting himself. I feel like that I was still in Dublin, but maybe my timeline's messy. Maybe I'm remembering it wrong.
The live chat seemed to think it was last autumn.
Yeah, that sounds right to me.
Yeah, obviously, yeah, I know when Charlottesville was. I'm trying to remember when he deplatformed Faith Goldie, and it's difficult to recall. I could have sworn it was earlier this year, but
I think it's 2017. Yeah. Near the fall of 2017 sounds right to me. Yeah,
right. So that was
the first time I was kind of like, whoa, maybe this guy isn't what he appears to be, you know. And I made a video about it at the time, and I was just like, this is sketchy, guys. What's going on with Jordan Peterson?
Yeah, I remember. I do remember at the time when I think I had said things to you either on Millennial or some other way, maybe Twitter, that I didn't agree with Jordan Peterson. I don't share the loathing of identity politics and all that, but you still, you know, you were still into him and all that, and then this happened, and I remember sort of feeling sorry. I felt sort of feeling guilty because it's like you'd clearly admired him and looked up to him, and you know you had the handle CC Bucko.
Yeah,
so obviously
it still is my handle.
Yes, yes. And I thought, oh, that's sad to see that that playing out, you know, because obviously it happens every day. Somebody is let down by someone they idolize or look up to. But yes. It's sort of sad to see it happening in front of me.
Absolutely. And thank you for empathizing, because it was a little traumatic. It was a little bit of a blow, because I think I, like many of his fans, had elevated him to a status which was undeserved. But what is good and what is the silver lining about Jordan Peterson no longer having heroic status in my mind was that was the beginning of me being my own hero, and of me deciding that I had what it takes to figure out what I needed to do for my life on my own, as opposed to constantly, you know, referencing the 12 rules for life type handbook, you know? And that was a natural progression that needed to happen. I think it's something that, you know, we all have heroes, you know, I'm sure you have your heroes and the people you look up to, and that's healthy, but we should never be looking to our heroes instead of looking for our own autonomy and trying to nurture that side of ourselves. They should just be the thing that encourages us to find that confidence in ourselves at the end of the day.
But yes, I completely agree. But this is actually a sort of ironic thing about Jordan Peterson. On the one hand, he tells people not to, what would be the word? Identify with their group or look to their group. Renege on their own individual responsibilities and identify with their group. But in the process of, doing what he does, he inevitably makes people identify with him and sort of renege their own responsibility, and they just become Peterson acolyte or Petersonites, let's see. So in a way, he becomes the substitute for their group. There's a sort of pathological thing about Jordan Peterson.
Yeah, and I didn't like that, because you know, Jordan Peterson always says, you know, the people who follow me don't like the alt-right. And I remember when he said that, or when I heard him say that for the first time, and I was like, well, wait a minute. Like, actually, that's not true, I don't think. Like, I know that if it wasn't for Jordan Peterson, I didn't know what the alt-right was when I found Jordan Peterson. But he essentially led me there. You know, because of the kind of, like, you know, I guess the alt-right comes out of the manosphere, and there's the red pill stuff regarding like feminism and being red pilled on women. And because of Jordan Peterson talking out against feminism, it's kind of like they converged and led me towards the alt-right and the manosphere. So that's just like wrong. It's not true. I'm sure he would like to think that he doesn't send people towards the alt-right, but I think he does.
Well, I mean, that will be just what a lot of people want to hear, you know, these lefties and progressives who say that he is a gateway to the alt-right. I mean, what I would say is he's an unwitting gateway. I do believe that he is genuinely opposed to the alt-right and to identity politics. I think that is completely sincere. I think it's genuine when he says that he wants to rescue young men from the darkness of identity politics, white nationalism, and so on. I think that really is the truth.
I agree. You know, I don't think that he'd be crying, you know, on radio shows when he talks about, you know, suicide rates if that weren't the case. And that passion and that, you know, that empathy and that, you know, that desire to help the men who have fallen through the cracks of society is something that, you know, really was something I really liked about him, and something I still like about him. I still think he's necessary, I think, for a lot of young men that are lost.
There's a certain irony again to Jordan Peterson, because what he does is he dissolves the progressivist communist conditioning, or he sort of takes people out of that worldview, but then they don't. Well, some of them do stay at his worldview, but others of them need something greater. They need something to believe in that beyond their own individual liberty and so on, and their own individual actualization and all that. They still want to belong to something. They still want to have something transcendental, and so they go to identity politics, white nationalism, and so on. And I think that So he cannot help but, you know, even when he tries to stop men from, or young men from going to this, he can't help but actually facilitate them going to the alt-right.
Yeah, I totally agree with you about that. And I think for me, you know, the fact that I'm from Newfoundland, and that Newfoundland is a really distinct place, and we have probably the lowest numbers of like visible minorities of any place in Canada. You know, we are a very culturally and ethnically distinct group of people, and so I mean, I'm not going to be told that I'm not allowed to identify with the people who are most like me in the world. I mean, that was something that really irked me when I heard Jordan Peterson kind of appealing to this militant individualism and saying, you know, leave behind your brothers and sisters and your ancestors that came before you, and, you know, the roads that they built for you so that you have an infrastructure to actually, you know, pursue your life in. It really bothered me. But I don't think that, I mean, people that are growing up on the mainland in Canada who are like, grow up in the GTA and this kind of thing, like, they don't have that same kind of background that I do as a Newfoundlander. And I think it's easier for them to get stuck in this kind of myopic, consumeristic, like, individualism type thing that Jordan Peterson sells. But I think for a lot of people who would be, you know, European or would have some kind of ethnic or cultural distinct element to where they grew up, it's a lot harder for us to buy into that, because whether we want to be a part of it or not, we are. And
that's when you get to the tragedy of Jordan Peterson, because he is the kind of person who can buy into that frankly empty consumerist culture. Yes. And I'm not saying that he is an empty consumer. He is clearly a man of some substance. But not spiritual substance. He's a man of intellectual substance, but there's something missing from the guy. I'm convinced there's something missing from him. And this is why he seems broken. He is a preacher who himself is, let's just say broken, but crucially, he doesn't seem to realize that he's broken. You know, he doesn't seem to understand that he is proffering an incomplete and quite unhealthy worldview to all of these young people who listen to him. He seems to think that he is actually preaching something that is not perfect, but let's just say complete. And I really don't think it is.
No, it isn't. And it wasn't for me. And that's why I had, after a certain point, there was a bunch of different disappointments that led me away from Jordan Peterson and into kind of more like trad life content, I suppose, that kind of thing. And I had to branch out, and I had to find my own way to distance myself from Jordan Peterson and reestablish my identity outside of the terms of just like this weird individualism. And that's kind of what I'm exploring now.
The Peterson pathology.
Yeah, literally.
So I guess that brings us to, around about the time of Last Millennial. And we talked, that was a very interesting discussion. I would recommend people watch it. And then shortly after that, you shut down your channel. I can't remember when that happened now. Was that around February, March?
It was around the beginning of February, of this year. I was just, people who have taken the red pill will know from their own personal experience that if you're a liberal and your whole life is kind of structured around these implicit assumptions about liberalism being true, when you take the red pill, if you really go the whole way with it, there's this kind of like your life dissolves, it slips between your fingers, and there's nothing to hold on to anymore. You know, I ended up leaving Ireland, where I was living for 6 years. I ended a 6-year long relationship. I moved back home with my parents, and I was lost. You know, I was just, I felt like I was free falling. I knew what I wanted. I knew that I wanted to find a good man and start a family. and go down that road. I knew that I wanted to not be the kind of person like Peterson who says things like, you know, I act as if God is real. I am the kind of person who actually, I believe in God and I am a Christian, and I needed to reestablish my relationship with God. And so I couldn't figure these things out or stabilize myself in the public eye. And also there was this point where I realized, oh my God, I've structured my entire online identity around Jordan Peterson. I'm like the Jordan Peterson fangirl. And I was just mortified by everything. I just wanted it gone. You know, I wanted a fresh start. I needed a clean slate because none of those things represented who I was anymore or where I was headed. And so I just nuked the channel and said, you know what, I'm not going to come back unless I'm not going to come back and talk to people unless I have something to offer them. And so I took 6 months.
I have to say, it's interesting because your rationale or your stated rationale at the time for leaving was very different from what you're saying now. And at the time you were saying that you weren't comfortable doing this. You felt you were too old to be a trad thought on the internet. Yes. And or a YouTube, I don't mean that in a disparaging way. I mean, a female YouTuber, and yes. And that was what you said at the time, and it's interesting that seems to have been a sort of cover story, as it were, maybe for yourself as well.
Well, it wasn't a lie. You know, I still don't have ads. Like I've come back, you know, and I don't ask for money from my audience. I don't sell things. I don't have ads on my YouTube videos. I was back then very uncomfortable with taking money from my audience. Although I did it because I felt like I needed to make a living. I saw it as something that I was doing that was work and it was meaningful and of value, and I deserved to be compensated for it. But the part of the trad thought thing that, you know, really hit home to me was that, am I taking advantage of people? Am I actually offering something that is worthwhile? And I had been a woman who was in a relationship all through my YouTube progression. And then all of a sudden I became a single woman who was a YouTuber, then also getting money from dudes online. And I was just uncomfortable with the whole thing.
Yes. I remember you saying that at the time.
And that was true. That was true. But there was, I mean, like when I made that video, I think that if I had started to say and speak genuinely about how destroyed I was, I don't think I would have made it through that video without breaking down. You know, so in a way, yes, it was the surface. It was a truthful veneer, which was why I was leaving. But there was a whole under layer of my personal life being in disarray that was also true at the time, which also motivated me to take a step back. And
I have to say, I did think this at the time. I thought there's something else going on that. Yes. You didn't, okay.
Yeah, and I mean, I probably wouldn't have actually, like I wasn't planning on coming back. It wasn't like I ended it and then I decided, okay, so now I'm going to fix everything so it's perfect so that I can come back. That wasn't what I was thinking. I was thinking that this online thing is a distraction, that I want a traditional relationship, and what conservative man would want to be with like a girl who has a YouTube channel, you know, the kind of guy that I'm after.
You'd be surprised.
Maybe, but that was my thinking. And so when I did find, you know, the guy that I'm currently with now, he believed that I had something to offer. And, he was the one that encouraged me to start my channel back up again, without the kind of monetary aspect of it, and which I really love, because now I make videos because of the things that I'm interested in and things that I'm passionate about. I'm not, you know, influenced at all by trying to make money or trying to get the most, squeeze the most out of my audience. So it sets a different tone for the channel now. And I don't feel guilty in the same way that I did back during the trad thought thing, you know, because I'm not asking for anything. I'm just offering my thoughts and sharing ideas and hoping that I can inspire people to, you know, be the best versions of themselves in a way.
Yeah, it's and how do you think that your channel has evolved, or how is it different? I mean, obviously we've talked about that aspect, but what about the actual material that you're doing now compared to a year and a half ago or a year ago?
Well, so the stuff that I've been doing recently, it's kind of all over the place. I really don't like putting myself on a schedule, like a weekly thing. So it's kind of like, if I'm inspired to speak and I have the desire to speak about something, I just do. The content is kind of moving towards, I do talk about politics sometimes, and I'll always probably talk about it a little bit, but it's moving more towards positive femininity and traditional femininity and traditional relationships. Hopefully within the, you know, my goal is to have kind of, do you know Varg's wife, Marie Cachet? She has like this channel where she like takes videos in her garden and she's like planting seeds with her like 10 million babies. And it's all very wholesome and beautiful and just homeschooling. And like, I'm not trying to copy what she's doing, but like, that's the kind of content that I would like to be moving towards, where, you know, I'm actually making my life something that I'm happy to live and something that gives me meaning, and then being able to show that to the world in a way that inspires others to do the same. As opposed to before, where it was like, I'm having a crisis, let's like embarrass myself on the internet, which was what my last channel was like.
I'm just reminded of my own crisis from 2 months ago. It's funny. I mean, I think different people will handle this in different ways. I've always been quite open, very open about things going on in my life, as much as I can be, because that's basically what I always thought the channel was, my channel was. And when it became just political and commenting on the world, it became far more dishonest from that's how I felt. That's why I hated it. I didn't enjoy it anymore. But obviously everyone, I mean, I'm not criticizing your decision here. I'm just saying that we obviously have a different attitude towards our respective channels. For me, the Acedia and Crisis series that I made 2 months ago, I'm very proud of it, actually.
Be.
Well, I mean, I say proud of it. And then the live stream that preceded it, you know, some people said, do you regret that? You know, because you were so emotional on stream. And I was like, no, not in the slightest. I still don't regret it. I mean, because it was, the way I see it now was that I had been building up this veneer or this appearance for months and months, like years, maybe 2 years, getting away from the honesty of the early days of the channel. Yes. And then suddenly that was sort of that honesty was breaking through again, because it couldn't be contained anymore because of the Twitter thing, the Twitter crisis. And I think it was a sort of reassertion of what I wanted the channel to be in the first place, actually.
Yeah. And I think those videos are always the best videos, you know, like my new channel, my sort of resurrected channel, there was something going on in my personal life between myself and my old friend group from university who were all liberals. And over the course of like 7 months, I was going through these debates behind the scenes of like, you know, me trying to explain myself, trying to, you know, I'm not a Nazi. Like, please, like, I don't hate gay people. I'm not like against people, you know, these are just some ideas that I now believe. Yeah, call me a reactionary, call me those things, but like trying to make a case for myself. And it was exhausting because I didn't want to lose these people. I loved them and I still love them. They're some of the best friends that I had ever had. But there was this moment where I felt like I couldn't take it anymore. And I made a video where I was like kind of on the verge of crying the whole time. It's a little bit cringy, but I was expressing the fact that I'm not going to be this, you know, pathologically agreeable person who's like constantly trying to win the approval of people in my life, and that I was going to choose me. And I might make mistakes. I might say things that are wrong along the path towards truth, and I'll amend that if that happens, but I'm not going to be doing it for anyone but me anymore. And that video has been the most successful video I think I've ever done. So, you know, to hell with anybody who has a problem with you being a bit emotional sometimes. Sometimes it's totally warranted, and I think it speaks to your authenticity as a content creator, and that's why people follow you at the end of the day, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that my own position in all of this, but sort of the role that I have, is quite unique. I mean, I wouldn't expect other people to take that approach at all, but still, it is certainly what I do enjoy it, and you know, it feels like I'm not going to say that I enjoy being depressed or having a crisis or something like that. I obviously don't mean that, but I do enjoy the feeling of having created something honest, and that is absolutely crucial to me, and I think to you as well.
It is, absolutely. And I think that's a big reason why people follow me at all. You know, I don't edit my videos just like you. That was one of the things that I originally really liked about your channel, is that there were these kind of stream of consciousness, no editing videos that, you know, really felt like you were speaking from the heart, and you really get to see a person under those conditions. If you have videos, there's tons of jump cuts, there's like, you know, graphics and music and all of these things that are meant to elicit certain emotions in the audience, I think that takes away from your ability to really just see a person for who they are. And that to me is what YouTube is supposed to be about. That's what YouTube was about back in like 2010 or something, you know. And I think a lot of creators have, yeah, that's what creators have lost touch with nowadays. And I hope that's something that, you know, people like myself and you can try and keep going, because I think there's a real desire for it.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, part of the popularization of YouTube has been the professionalization of the craft of making YouTube videos. Yes. It's not something that people do with an old camcorder from the 90s and, you know, something like that anymore. Mm-hmm. There are now gadgets that are specifically sold for, you know, for YouTubers. Now, I'm not going to decry this like an old fart and say this new technology is ruining everything. But there is always the danger that when something is made too easy, or when there's a formula being laid out for how to do this, it's going to become something that people do by the numbers and not for the right reasons, perhaps.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the thing is, I don't have a problem with it either. And, you know, I have experimented a little bit with doing the kind of edited style videos, and I kind of enjoy them. But I mean, I think that there's a real craft to honing your ability to use spoken word to express yourself in a way that's genuine and relatable and true. And something that the more that I've done it on my channel, the more I feel like confident in myself just in everyday life. And I think that based on the comments and the letters that I've received from other people, it inspires people to do the same, you know? So
Absolutely.
It's a craft. You know, some people are good with the technology bit. Some people are more, you know, just expressive in that way.
Oh, your camera. Oh, there it is. It's back again. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot that I could say about this from my own perspective. Mm-hmm. But I think it's probably wouldn't be fair. I'll be saying that stuff in the 2018 in review video anyway. So there's
perfect.
Yeah. I've actually got to film the 2017 in review video first, because due to how tumultuous things have been this year, I haven't done that yet.
Oh, so wow.
Yeah, I'm going to do them on consecutive days once Millennial's finished.
That's going to be quite interesting to watch, actually. I'll be looking forward to that.
Well, it's another one of those things that's been on the... I know that I should do it, and so I worry about the fact that I've not done it yet, and you know, it just becomes a ridiculous self-fulfilling cycle sort of thing. Dreadful.
I know. I know what you mean. I've got a list of things that I want to talk about on my channel too, and it's terrible. I need to get myself on a little bit more of a schedule, because once I put something up and it has a good response, I always feel like, you know, oh, why did I wait so long to get that out there? But yeah, I know what you mean.
Well, I mean, this is great. I think this has been a nice sort of update on your own development and so on. Is there anything else you'd like to add to this? Like maybe talk about what you're doing right now in the near future?
Well, so right now I'm exploring femininity and talking about femininity a little bit more. Something that I think, like, I just feel like I am kind of a feminine girl, and that I always have been. And so it's something that I've not tried to put into words before. And so it's been really fun and interesting to kind of test the waters with my ideas regarding femininity on Twitter. If people are interested in hearing my thoughts on a more frequent, like kind of daily basis with regard to those things, follow me on Twitter. My YouTube channel is still kind of more spoken word. And once I kind of make these ideas a little bit more concrete, I hope to sort of flesh them out in a video essay type style over there. So yeah, depending on what you're looking for, you can follow me on either platform. And I mean, I don't really know where I'm headed. That's kind of the beauty of the channel, is that it's spontaneously emerging along with my life as I progress down this path. And I'm really hoping that there's going to be, like, you know, bacon apple pie videos and growing carrots in the garden videos and this kind of stuff coming up, you know, in the not too distant future for people to watch and enjoy.
Great. And yeah, that's great. I think maybe there'll be similar, well, not equivalent videos on my own channel, but I'm not sure yet. So yeah, funny how these things coincide and sort of change and evolve and all the rest of it.
Well, absolutely. I've really looked forward to this chat, and hopefully if I can come again next year, we can have another update and, you know, have a little reflection about how we've grown.
yeah great. I was going to suggest that. So great. Okay, well, shall we end it there?
Yes, absolutely. I'd just like to wish everyone a happy Christmas. I hope everyone has a really blessed and safe holiday. And you too. I hope you have a great holiday and a happy Christmas, folks. Thanks for having me on.
Oh, thank you very much. So this is Robin from Critical Condition. Thank you for appearing on Millennial 2018. I think a lot of people will have enjoyed this.
My pleasure. Take care, guys.
Okay. Well, I'll be back. I won't be back tomorrow, but there will be 4 pre-recorded shows tomorrow. Hold on, I'll just read them out, what they are. Okay, it's the Coach and Benway, Coach Red Pill and Dr. Benway podcast, Pox Populi, Pride and Post-Judas, and then Faustian Spirit. So they'll be pre-recorded. I know it's not quite the same, but I have to do that for tomorrow night. And then I'll be back the night after that with what looks to be 6 shows. And I should say that the Bronx Blogger has been rescheduled for that night. And also Jessie Lee Peterson is going to appear that night as well. So, and the Distributus and Cultured Thug and Apollonian Jerm and Semiogog. So it's going to be a busy night. 6 people or 6 hangouts. And okay. So I'll wish me luck with that one. okay. So I will see you then. In the meantime, I hope you enjoy the pre-recorded ones tomorrow. And I hope you enjoyed this, and especially this one with Critical Condition. So thank you, and I will see you later.